the story of Sudeshika Thirumanesh. Please look her up if you haven't heard of it. She was dying, and she said she wanted to die trying to live. And I think that's the most hopeful message you can pass on to any generation, because it then helps one deal with childhood cancer, the things which you just can make no sense of in the world. But by creating this human right to die, it's so indicative of how lost society is. I do not think it should have been legislated in Parliament.
When we pass this into law, okay, so we've had the first reading, the second reading, there's still a third reading to go. But if this gets passed into law, it essentially means that the state has the authority to kill someone. And people say, well, it's not the state. You have to agree with two doctors. But legally, it is the state who has the authority, therefore, and the socialist healthcare system has the authority to end a human life. That is a dangerous ground, very slippery slope.
Hello and welcome to another episode of Fox and Father, with me, the Fox, and him,
the Father.
Fess up, Father.
I do have a confession to make. This week, I have coffee. This is Fox and Father take two. This time it's personal. Yeah, we did a Fox and Father episode. I was a grumpy old mooch because I hadn't had my morning coffee and I got dragged out of bed to record. So I was kind of grumpy. I apologize for that. And Lawrence has been very gracious and he's letting us do it again.
It was quite funny because you thought that I was phoning to check in and have a catch up. But we've become so lazy in our catch up, in our personal catch ups, that we tend to do our catch ups on Fox and Father, which I think is not correct. And
I was genuinely so happy when I saw your name come up. I was like, oh, this is really sweet. He's phoning to have a nice chat. And you were like, would you in the studio like now? I was like, oh, okay.
I called you after for a nice chat.
You did.
Right. So on this week's show, well, actually, it's really good that we're re-recording it because of the assisted murder dying bill, which we need to talk about. So we're going to talk about that. Mm-hmm. We're going to talk about Reform's 100,000th member, Ben Habib, Andrea Jenkins. Mm. And what else are we going to talk about?
And there was some news with the BBC as well.
Ah, yes. The increase in the license fee. Can't wait. Thrilled. But off, as always, in Fox and Father, to a really upbeat, happy note, assisted dying bill. So the assisted dying bill was
first
passed.
Of all, Lawrence, how are you?
Oh, God, yes, we haven't done that. How are you? I tell you what, I am in bits. I'm not going to lie. My body, well, because of all the exercise.
Oh, gosh, yeah, you're a strongman now.
Well, I'm not. I'm a flabby old 46-year-old man, but the exercise, when I woke up this morning having done leg day yesterday, which, let's face it, is just the worst.
Oh, I love leg day. I'm weird like that.
Yeah, but you've actually got legs. I've got like little chicken legs that don't work.
Yeah.
So I'm in bits. I'm not gonna lie. I'm in a lot of pain. I've been in a lot of pain today, and this is a source of much humour for the soon-to-be Mrs. Fox.
Mark, but it's a refreshing sort of pain, isn't it?
It's a good pain. It is good. And it's good. It's good to know that your muscles are there. That's what they're there for. So, and it's done lots for my thinking, but it's not done much for my life. I could just, if I go like this and collapse halfway through, it's because I'm not used to doing the physical exercise. But other than that, I'm good. How are you, my brother?
I'm great. Thank you. Great. I've been going to the gym every day. In fact, one of the people who works at my gym has started coming to my church, which is nice. Church is going well. Things are good out here. We just had Thanksgiving, which was absolutely lovely. It was really, really special. I got to spend time with a parishioner and her family, and it was just very wholesome and heartwarming. It was like a traditional Hallmark Thanksgiving. We had all the trimmings, the stuffing, and the turkey and all of that. But it's pouring it down with snow outside. It's thick snow. This is my first taste of Michigan snow, Michigan winter.
I know you even managed to make that a bit racist by calling it a white Black Friday.
We're having a white Black Friday.
I thought it was a bit racist, but it's fine by me. And also your Thanksgiving was appreciated from over here because I literally woke up in the morning and Lizzie was like, I'm hungry. And I'm like, what? And she's like, I'm hungry. And then she just showed me the photo of your Thanksgiving dinner. And I was like, thanks a lot. I'm tired and I need to sleep off this massive workout regime that I'm tied into. But it's great. Well, what are you great?
You know what you need after workout? Protein.
Yes, I do. Turkey. I've got. What I do is I'm not a big fan of turkey, not going to lie. Sorry, chaps. No, it's dry. And
isn't what
I feel
everyone says? I've never had a dry turkey. If you cook it well, it's nice. It's good.
I know. I'll just do a chicken. I mean,
the best thing after Christmas Day, or even I suppose after Thanksgiving, is the leftover turkey in a sandwich with a sprinkling of salt, some a slab of butter. Oh, can't go wrong.
I like it, but I prefer, like, the closest I can get to a turkey is a capon, which is a cockerel.
Okay.
And that's about as far as I would get.
Headline.
Right. Capon. Fox comes out in favor of capons. And what are you grateful for, my friend?
I am grateful for you. And for Fox and Father, for our friendship, but also our platform to kind of share what's on our minds. And of course, our audience, who are always very supportive and there for us. And it's kind of, you know, we're never on our own. And that's a nice thing.
I've got a quick Fox and Father shout out, by the way.
Oh, go on.
Because I like what Pete said in terms of going, Pete English, by the way, Pete English on Twitter. Oh, where is he? Where is he when you need him? He's really funny. Come on, Lars. Jack David on Twitter.
Yeah.
He's at @FFS_whatnow. For fuck's sake, what now? Jack David, he's a comedian, I believe, and a podcaster. He describes himself sweary, gay, no affiliation to the alphabet, Mario, co-host of Two Puffs in a Podcast. He's very funny and he makes me laugh a lot. And he came up with some great lines about Kamala Harris being unburdened by what has been rather than unburdened. So he's my Fox and Father shout out. So I'm thankful to him. I'm very thankful for you. I'm thankful for... I was talking to Larry about this the other day. I'm thankful for so many things. And one of those things I was thankful for in the long run, which is deeply unfashionable nowadays, is suffering, which brings me pretty quickly onto this is a dying bill,
right?
Which was passed by. Hang on a minute, I've got it. I'm getting clever now.
330 was it to 257?
Yeah, it was passed by. It wasn't. I thought it was going to be a bigger. She was like, 1 in 5 people support it. Kim Ledbetter better does well, not helping someone else. 330 to 275. So it's a lot closer than you thought. And a lot of Lib Dems in there. A lot of Labour, obviously, but a lot of Lib Dems supporting assisted dying. Anyway, what do you... Let's just break it down because it's such a big topic.
Yeah, and I was surprised by the majority, by the way. I thought they'd lose it, but...
I thought they'd win by more.
Okay.
So let's break it down. What is assisted dying?
Assisted dying is killing of the vulnerable when they are convinced that life is not worth living anymore.
At their most vulnerable.
Yeah. I don't think anyone should be convinced that their life is not worth living anymore. Whether they're depressed, whether they're physically in pain, whether they feel lonely, whatever the circumstances, I don't think anyone should be convinced of that. Our job as people should be to convince people that they are loved, right? We have two things that we're supposed to do as human beings, to love God and to love our neighbor. And that's literally. So no one should feel lonely, isolated. No one should feel suffering on their own. And no one should feel depressed on their own. Everyone should have someone to help them through their suffering. That's why charities like Samaritans and all those charities that are plastering their number across these horrible billboards are so good. Because we've got billboards like people like jumping up and down and excited about ending their life, which is a horrible message to be sending. And so and these are all across Westminster where people are, of course, voting. So it's essentially lobbying that we're seeing in the capital. But it all comes down to what you just said. You're thankful for your suffering. And we live in a society where people are afraid to suffer and will do anything to avoid suffering. But actually, we can't avoid suffering. It's the one thing we're guaranteed in life after birth and death. We're not even guaranteed birth anymore, but suffering is something we are guaranteed because it's sanctifying. It gets us from where we are to where we need to be, for better or for worse. And so we need to learn that we are not doing it on our own, because Jesus Christ is with us in our suffering because he suffered for us. But also we have each other, and that's what we need to be better at. We need to help people, especially the elderly and the vulnerable. We need to help them through the hard times.
Yeah, I second that. I'm trying to think of the counter argument. So I understand, and I've witnessed this. I put out a post yesterday about my friend Chris, who was diagnosed with tongue cancer. And he was literally the most acerbic person you could ever meet. So, and he even found it funny that he was diagnosed with tongue cancer. But it destroyed his life, and in the end, he rotted to death. It was the worst, but he never complained, never was a victim. He spoke about some of the most, he took me when I would talk to him about the stuff like this into the darkest places I've ever been. But he never said, I want to die. Mm-hmm. He never did. And he came from a family of Catholics, and I'm sure that affected how it is. But what one looks on as you know, in this topsy-turvy world, as an example of humans' kindness to each other, which is to alleviate suffering, actually is the worst possible thing you can do. Because human suffering is, as you quite rightly point out, it's impossible to get rid of. The entire story, the Jesus Christ story, is he suffered more than anyone will ever suffer so that we will be free. But I can sort of, on an individual level, I can understand if someone has been through a terrific and horrible death, or someone they love has been through a terrific and horrible death, that they could go, oh, it would just be easier if they were, you know, put down. But this already takes place. So it's called palliative care. My mother worked in the National Health Service with dying people. And very often I was assured, which is why Harold Shipman should get a posthumous knighthood, I was assured that what would happen is people would get to the point where they just couldn't, the pain was too much. So what they would do is they would just help them on their way. But it didn't become a human right to die. It became part of the nebulous gray world of those that are very close to the person in the room, witnessing their suffering and trying to be as compassionate as possible. Yeah. And I think by creating, Danny Kruger said this, by creating this new human right, the right to die, we've actually reduced all of the other human rights, which is the right to life.
Yeah, the right to live is a life. The right to life is a right, is a God-ordained right. There is no right to die.
And Sudhishka Thirumalesh, which touched all of us so much, the story of Sudhishka Thirumalesh, please look her up if you haven't heard of it. She was dying, and she said she wanted to die trying to live. And I think that's the most hopeful message you can pass on to any generation, because it then helps one deal with childhood cancer, the things which you just can make no sense of in the world. But by creating this human right to die, I think we basically, it's so indicative of how lost society is. I do not think it should have been legislated in Parliament. And I think that we're going to see a few, not too long down the road, we're going to see people, they say that there's a protection, which is that you can't kill yourself. You can't kill yourself if you have a psychological disorder. It has to be a terminal disorder, right? But as Danny Kruger pointed out again, he said, well, when you're anorexic and you've starved yourself almost totally to death, it then becomes a physical disorder. So you will be able to kill yourself for that reason. And then the human rights lawyers will turn around and say, well, hang on a minute. Why do they get to kill themselves with a terminal diagnosis? And why don't I get to kill myself? So it's this thing of a human right. What do you think about that?
I think you're absolutely spot on. And we've seen this slippery slope straight away. These safeguards that are put in place. You know, Canada has safeguards, and straight away it started out when someone's in extreme suffering, extreme pain, and it quickly became, well, actually, mental suffering is suffering too. And then it became, well, if a teenager is depressed, why can he not have the right to kill himself? It's monstrous, it's demonic, it's evil, it's bad. But what you touched on was that kindness, and people are trying to be kind, and that's where they're falling down into the trap. My friend Lola Salem put out an article in The Critic, and the headline here is, we need more than liberal wishy-washy notions of humanity for discussing ethics of care. because justice, true justice, cannot be substituted by the hollow platitude of merely being kind. And she's so right, because this is the problem with so much of our society, from the woke stuff, you know, to the trans stuff, to assisted suicide. It's all a wishy-washy, well, we have to be kind. It's like, that's not enough. We have to be true. We have to be merciful. We have to seek justice. All these things go hand in hand. And we can't just focus on the one, because it leads us down this faux compassion. We often talk about this suicidal empathy. And this is where we're going, because when we pass this into law, okay, so we've had the first reading, the second reading, there's still a third reading to go. But if this gets passed into law, it essentially means that the state has the authority to kill someone. And people say, well, it's not the state. You have to agree with two doctors. But legally, it is the state who has the authority, therefore. And the socialist healthcare system has the authority to end a human life. That is a dangerous ground, very slippery slope.
Yeah, exactly, the thin end of the wedge thing of the Clintons back in the day talking about abortion being safe, legal, and rare.
Say a lot of the Clintons' friends ended up suiciding themselves.
They did, didn't they? And isn't that a surprise? Who would want to be a friend of them? But, you know, safe, legal, and rare. Yeah. You know, and you make the exception for the insane. I don't think it's ever good to argue any case on the exception to the rule.
No.
So you should never argue any case on that. So this idea that, well, what about cases of rape and incest? Well, yeah. the same philosophy applies if you're consistent, if you're intellectually consistent. You go, yeah, but it's still not the child's fault.
Yeah.
Whether it was the result. So one has to stick to the line. And
that's a good example. A maximum of 1.5% of all abortions are due to rape and incest together, right? So all the rest are convenience, contraception, choice. You know, people are choosing to kill their offspring. And it was set up as if it was the extremities. It was set up as if it was for the rare situation. It's no longer rare. It's ordinary. It's normal. It's normative. That's sad.
It is sad. And I think I have a very, very strong suspicion that abortion will become an issue again. I know it's an issue in America, but I think it's going to start rearing its head again. And I'm pleased that it is, because once you start talking about the right to die, you're also talking about the right to kill.
Well, and Dr. Callum Miller is a good man. He's been doing some research. He's been highlighting the UN's project for a population program strategic plan, which explicitly outlines the reducing of population growth rates. Like, there is an active depopulation program. And on the one hand, we've got mass abortion. On the other hand, we've got these states pushing, and it's not just ours, pushing for euthanasia. So killing people at the start of life and at the end of life, and at the same time trying to take over the food process, you know, taking farms, essentially, from farmers. Adding all this stuff together, it's easy to see how people could come to conspiracy theories.
Well, it's also another prime and classic example of the fact that wokery and progressivism is a religion. Mm. And it's a religion, obviously, we've discussed this a million times, but it's a religion without redemption. And therefore, the kindest thing you can do to someone is kill them. And Larry said something really interesting to me the other day when Christopher Hitchens got his terminal cancer diagnosis. He was an atheist. Yeah. And he said that Christopher Hitchens said to him, you're the only Christian who's not turned around and said that I'm praying for you. And Larry said to him, he said, yeah, no, I'm really pleased. God's told you that he's coming for you. So, you're not going to meet him randomly, you know, having stepped out in front of a bus or something. And that sort of Christian perspective, which in the past I found so difficult to get my head around, that absolute certainty and that the certainty of one's faith, I now find absolutely completely normal. And either that's a sign that I'm becoming more radical, I suppose, in the eyes of the woke religion, because that they want to take down Christianity more than anything else in the world because it offers true redemption, or I'm becoming more open-minded to different points of view. And that's sort of where it left me. But I find it so sad that we're going to do this. And I kind of want to go through some of the, let me see if I can do it on this computer.
So a lot of the people are saying, but you know, I know someone, I've loved someone, I've lost someone, it's been painful. And that's true. And I'm not taking away from that. But the question I ask in return is, do you trust the state? Do you trust the medical professionals in their judgment with the end of your life or the life of the ones that you love? That's a question. Do you trust them? I don't. I personally would not trust the NHS with the life of my mother or my father or my own life. I don't trust the state with those lives either.
No. What, and why would you? I mean, what? Literally, why would you do that on any level at all?
Yeah, it's far cheaper to kill us than it is to keep us alive.
Okay, so let's just look at some of these people, shall we? Let's look at the key people. So yeah. The key MPs who voted for the bill, Keir Starmer, obviously, loves death. He is a psychopath. Chancellor Rachel Reeves, liar. Okay. Oh, Rishi Sunak, interesting. I would have thought he would have been against it. Jeremy Hunt, obviously, of course, he wants dead people. He loves it. Yvette Cooper, John Healey, Defence Secretary, Liz Kendall, Work and Pension Secretary, Northern Ireland Secretary, Hilary Benn. Hilary Benn is not a stupid guy, so I would be interested to have a discussion with him about it. Ed Miliband, Lisa Nandy. Oh, God. It's just reading the Labour people. Lib Dem Deputy Leader Daisy Cooper, Clyde Cymru Leader Liz Saville, Oliver Dowden, Victoria Atkins. Those who voted against. So you've got Ed Davey, leader of the Lib Dems. So his party didn't follow him on that one. No one knows who is in charge of the Lib Dems anymore. Yeah. Kemi Badenoch. Good for you. I'm going to let you in on it. I'm sure that Kemi wouldn't mind me saying this. She might mind, but I don't care if she minds. But I had a conversation with her and I said, the assisted dying thing is actually quite a good, it's a good point to, it's a principle of real true conservatism. Cool. And she said, you know, I've witnessed real suffering and on an individual level, I don't really mind, but on a legislative level, I've got a real problem with it. And I thought, good for you. Wes Streeting, Labour Health Secretary, would be interesting to know. Angela Rayner voted against it. David Lammy voted against it. Probably thought he was voting for whether it was whether to send some more missiles to Ukraine to try and start World War III. Priti Patel, Diane Abbott voted against it. Cyrilla Boverman, Jeremy Corbyn, Shabana Mahmood, Bridget Phillipson and Jonathan Reynolds. So what do you think is taking those? Because it is an interesting thing on the right. We would have thought, well, but your choice is our thing. And on the left, they think, no, murder everyone, it's collectivism. But what do you think is driving left-leaning and in some cases extreme left-leaning people to object to the assisted dying bill?
I would probably think faith. Davey and people like that would be the Christian faith that are leading to vote against it. And the actual conservatives on the conservative side, like Priti Patel, are of course voting against it because they realize that they're conservatives first, not liberals, which is important. As for people like Rishi Sunak and all the big names that are voting for it, well, they're all the globalists, aren't they? They're all probably part of the UND population program.
Mm. Matt Hancock came out with a real
monster of a person.
He's a monster, isn't he? What did he say?
The guy responsible for shipping elderly COVID patients into care homes. The guy responsible for pumping them full of midazolam to kill them off. The guy responsible for putting do not resuscitate labels on the disabled and special needs. This guy, he needs to repent before it's too late.
Allegedly. I want to keep our YouTube channel if it's all right with you. Matt Hancock, I'm delighted MPs have voted decisively in favour of changing the law on assisted dying to allow people with terminal illness to die with dignity. This is a major liberal reform to alleviate suffering at the end of life. I mean, someone is paying that guy to have his opinions.
Oh, I don't think they are. I think he's just in league with the enemy.
I just said fingers crossed they can backdate the bill to anyone who was assisted to die with a nice big dose of midazolam and morphine during the flu season of 2020.
Right. So, I mean, he hasn't killed enough people off. He wants to kill more.
Why do they want to kill people? And it's, again, it's this mad fuckwittery of going, I'm being kind by killing you. Mm. So you're not, you're killing me. And Esther Ranson and all of the stuff behind it in Global... And all of the stuff, another shout out for Fox and Father followers. I'm sure you all do follow her, which is Charlotte Gill. At Chazza Gill has done some good work in this. You had her on your show, did you not?
Yeah, she was on the crusade and she was brilliant. She's been really She's an investigative journalist now. She's just been looking at what's going on behind the scenes. So she's found connections between Global, who produce LBC and the news agents, but also Led by Donkeys and Carol Vorderman. It looks like there's some dark money behind the scenes, like a George Soros kind of investment in death in our culture.
And we don't seem to have that sort of investment, bar the wonderful friend, my friend Jeffrey. We don't seem to have a huge amount of investment on the right. Rumours are circulating that the Conservative Party is going bust slowly at the moment.
Well, there are investors, but they're all like libertarians. So there's Tufton Street, which is, you know, neocons or neolibs, but we don't really have conservative backers or Christian backers in that way. Well, I suppose there's the backer behind GB News and Spectator. But,
yeah. Well, we've been there before. I don't think we need to go there again. So what does it say about society that we have decided?
Yeah. The UK needs a lot of prayer. It's trapped in a death cult, trapped in a death environment. We've got people who are supposed to represent their constituents voting in favour of killing them. Like, hold a referendum on it if you think it's that important, but don't rush it through after 5 hours of debate. It's monstrous what's happening. It feels like everywhere you look, there's death gripping the nation. We need to pray our way out of it. We're not going to legislate out of it.
I think you're right. I think everywhere you look, there is death. And I also think that if it was a big enough deal, which it is, that allowing the state to put its nasty little fingers into one's, the end of one's life, having, you know, waiting to steal the money once you're dead, which we know that they're going to do, which is the most miserly and horrible thing in the world anyway. But the idea that the state now has that power is terrifying to me. I'm so terrified, and I think you're right. One has to pray its way out of it. But in America, you've got a system. I mean, obviously, the much vaunted thing from Oregon, you know, it's there. Well, no one's abused it. It's been going on since 1996. And that's what they've been hammering down our heads. But in every other circumstance where this has been allowed, it's been abused immediately. So are these people going to come crying when it all goes wrong, which it will, and young anorexic girls or transitioners who have gone, I just made myself infertile because the state allowed me to do that. Now I don't want to live because I'm never going to be able to bear a child or any of those things. Why are we allowing the state anywhere fucking near our lives?
Two interesting points there. Yeah, so it is allowed in some US states. I think there are 10 states plus DC, but looking on the map, in fact, I'll send the map into the group so that we can put it on the screen because I don't have the names of the states. But looking on the map, you can see that it's all the blue states. It's all the Democrat states. It's the culture of death. And also you mentioned, I think you're touching on what we call trans there, but this is the point in that they've transed the same people that are going to be vulnerable to this new law are the people that would have trans themselves, right? They would have gone through the trans process. But the problem with this is you can de-trans. You can't de-euthanize. And so that they're looking to get rid of the same people.
Well, you can't actually de-trans. That's the problem. You can't. But these are also the same people that are giving Women's Footballer of the Year to men.
Yeah.
I'm so confused.
It's cultural conversion, isn't it? It's just darkness in our culture.
Is it a deliberate desire to create chaos? You know that thing about the socialism where they say it's just the ends justify the means. And therefore, you never define what the means are. Sorry, you never define what the ends are, so that the means are constantly updated. And therefore, it's a subversion of everything which is within the natural order. And I suppose that the Christian faith stands in absolute protection of the natural order, whilst having an enormous supernatural element to it, which is faith, this idea of faith. And while we're on the subject of that,
move on, the Catechism of the Catholic Church says the end does not justify the means, because we're never allowed to do something evil in order to do something good.
Perfect. So, yes, a few days ago, a researcher phones me up, doesn't phone me up, contacts me privately, and says, I noticed that you're talking a lot about the religion of peace. About Islam, and I'd be very happy to talk you through the last 30 years of work in my life, if you've got an hour, a couple of hours. So I said, sure, that'd be great. Turns out on a Friday night, I sit down.
You're so generous with your time.
Well, I want to know more. I'm fascinated. So I don't feel like it's being generous. I feel like it's being like, I want to know when someone comes up to me and goes, he who harms a single hair on another human's head, you know, and starts quoting the Quran at me. I want to know exactly what that verse actually says. Mm. Right. You know, I do. I don't want to be able to have someone come and attack, well, not attack, but try and defend to me with false prophecy or false liturgy. I want to know. It's not about being generous. It's about trying to inform yourself, which a lot of people just don't do. We just function on emotion, not fact. Anyway, I was sat there listening, and one of the things that I found absolutely astonishing about Islam was, just to quickly tell me what your last point was just before I started interrupting.
You can't do evil in order to do good.
You can, in Islam. Not only are you allowed to, you are permitted to, you're properly encouraged to. So one of the things I found, she was telling me, was that jihad is not encouraged in Muslim countries, in already Islamic countries. It's only encouraged in other countries. Huh. And she was talking to me about taqiyya, the idea that 2.5% of everything a Muslim makes has to go back into Islam. And then she started talking to me about, she said, here's a good example for you. Halal. So Islam comes into a country, goes, oh, we're just small, there's not many of us, you know, please help. And also we can't eat that. We need halal. So could we have halal? So people go, well, of course, we want to be inclusive. We're suicidally empathetic to you. We'll do it. So halal starts coming in. And then we, the West, start paying for it because we're putting it into our schools. And we are basically, what came up was, we are paying for our own destruction.
Yeah.
We are complicit in paying for our own destruction. And I said, well, what does one do about this? And she said, what you need to do is A, stop paying for it, because it also says in the Quran, if Islam is not being welcomed in the country where it's trying to set hold, then withdraw to a country where it is, where Islam is good. So it's not, there is a commandment to do that. And the second thing she said was, what if you get every single Western nation to recommit to the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, which bans slavery? Slavery is acceptable in Islam. So Islam cannot accept slavery. And then she took me down a massive rabbit hole of George Floyd, which I thought was quite fun.
I want to know more about that. If a country doesn't welcome you, you're not allowed to, you should move on. If you can find that for me, that would be great.
Yeah, I will look it up and hopefully I'll get some context for it. But because obviously I'm receiving huge amounts of information at the same time. But she said, Islam will not sign up to the Universal Declaration of Human Rights because Islam permits slavery. Yeah. It's permitted. So with Muhammad and with Islam, things are either encouraged, permitted, allowed, not allowed, forbidden. That is the nature of it. Mm-hmm. So it's not a religion. It's an entire socioeconomic way of living. And it is, as we've said, a million. Yeah. But the thing about Judaism is a soft-touch thing, you know, and it's not driven by the extremists, is it? You know, the people that stand up for Jews are not, the people who are walking through, you know, the campaign for anti-Semitism are not Hasidic Jews, you know, they're just not. So that there's an assimilation thing that goes on. But Islam specifically demands that you spread Islam. That's what it does. And it gives you a lot of excuses to spread it in a lot of ways that we wouldn't accept at all. So, I mean, I call out Islam. The reasons I get annoyed with Islam is I pick it up for things like apostasy, that being banned, which makes you, you then have a fatwa, you can be killed. First cousin marriages, I think that, you know, and the enormous cost to the NHS that causes. Okay. Child marriage. All of these things, homosexuality, I know, you know, we differ on that one, but also
I don't think they should throw homosexuals off roofs. I think that's a bit much.
Okay, fine, Calb. You're becoming a really soppy liberal now.
I know.
But I called out for all these simple things, and she was telling me, you're paying for it. You're literally paying for your own demise. And I thought, that is so depressing, which takes me neatly on, if you don't mind, to why everyone is getting upset about reform at the moment. Now, I know you've said you've said all you want to say about Farage and what he's and his absolute lack of engagement.
There have been some interesting turns of events recently.
Yeah. So tell us what happened.
Andrea Jenkins said, I will not remain in the Conservative Party if Kimmy Badenoch wins. And she's followed through with her word. Kimmy Badenoch has won as the leader of the Conservative and Unionist Party. And so Andrea Jenkins has said, you're not a real Conservative. I'm off. Goodbye, love. And she's joined Reform. That's bold of Andrea Jenkins because, you know, she's been a key Conservative politician for a long time. So for her to make that move and cross the floor, essentially, that's saying a lot. But of course, also, go on.
Do you think she should have defected to Reform before, though? Because Reform stood against her in her constituency, and I've been up to Morley and Outward, and she's always been very friendly to me, and she would have kept her seat if that hadn't been for Reform.
I mean, you can't really, in retrospect, say should have, would have, could have. I love Andrea Jenkins. I think she's fantastic, and I support her entirely in her decision to move away from the Conservative Party, which is not Conservative. Not that I'm betting against Kimmy. I'll give her time and the benefit of the doubt. But I think Andrea was right to make her move and stick to her guns.
It was interesting that Andrea became Reform's 100,000th member. Ben Habib has a slight issue with this idea of membership of Reform. Do Reform have members or do they have subscribers to Nigel Farage?
As far as I know, it's still a pyramid scheme, isn't it?
Yeah, I think so. And the attack on Reform has come from Ben Habib, who has turned around and said that he was given assurances that the party would be democratized, which means that the so-called members who are actually just paying subscribers, like you'd subscribe to Netflix, which is fine. I've got no issue with that.
Do have an issue with it because they think they're getting something. They think they're becoming members, but they get no democratic say. They don't get to vote on policies or people or leaders, which is why it's kept out, because we know Farage wants to be the dictator. If that's fine, if he was transparent about it. But when they're subscribing to Reform, what they're actually doing is basically paying his Patreon.
Yeah, I don't think that Farage's return to politics might be one of the worst decisions anyone has ever made.
Oh, he's lovely. Look, you saw the video of not David Cameron, the other one. Which one's in charge now? Sir Keir Starmer crossing the floor to go and have a nice buddy-buddy chat with Farage. They're all friends. They love it. It's great. He's like, you're playing your part very well. That's fantastic for them. It's the best decision he ever made. He's getting paid more money now, and he's sitting in that lovely house full of heritage that he's always wanted to be in. He's living his best life.
I did notice when I used to go into Parliament to watch Bridgen, who now no one talks about, but it was very brave over vaccines, Bridgen.
Yeah.
And I used to go into Parliament and I used to watch them. And they do, like, that sort of behaviour that was caught on camera and shared, went viral over the last couple of days. That's how they are all the time until the cameras are really on and it's Prime Minister's questions or something like that. They're just laughing at each other. They're all like, whatever, they'll buy this crap that we're selling them. And it's the same, sorry to just take it a little bit back, to the assisted dying thing, but it's the same idea of going, you know, we'll sell you a diesel car. We'll tell you, you've got to buy a diesel car because it's better for everyone. And we'll shrink the price of diesel. So everyone gets a diesel car. And then once everyone's bought a diesel car, we'll tax the hell out of you. And we'll make sure it's really difficult. It's the same with the assisted dying thing. It's like, we'll sell you transitioning and then we'll sell you death as a cure. And I am sick to death of these politicians. And I know that one of the reasons you wanted to redo this episode was because you were in such a bad mood about these people. But I do think what you were saying, even though, you know, you possibly were in a bit of a bad mood about it, but I think what you were saying is absolutely true. These people are all on the same fucking side. They don't give a shit about people. They only care about themselves. They don't realise that while seeking authority, you're actually seeking a godly authority to serve other people. It's a humble gesture to search for the authority to serve. But they think the complete opposite. They think, I know better than you, therefore I'm going to have authority over you, and I'm going to tell you how you should live. And I just think that's appalling.
Spot on. That's the thing I hate the most. That's spot on. Like they feel like they've been upgraded. They've been put on a pedestal and they are now our rulers or our leaders. No, they're there to serve us. And servant leadership means that they are there to represent us. That's the, we have a representative democracy. They should be there on behalf of the people, not to tell people what to do. And this doesn't make a difference if it's Labour, Conservative, Reform, Lib Dem. They're all the same in that they think that they've got power. They have no power. We have the power. Unfortunately, the people haven't found a way to manifest that power as of yet. But the parliamentarians should be afraid of the people, not the other way around. Right now, I feel like the people are afraid of the parliamentarians. That needs to be flipped. This is why the First and Second Amendment in America is so important, because the government should always be afraid of the people. The people should never, ever be afraid of the government, because that is tyranny. And that's why we're entering a tyrannous, authoritarian stage of darkness.
Well, we spoke about it on our last one about the fact that we need a Bill of Rights. I've been looking into this, you know, First and Second Amendment, essentially. And, you know, you were cynical about it by saying, no, man, you know, it'll just get used against, you know, the minute the next person comes into power, you know, don't trust politics. And then I was speaking to some lawyers because, you know, lawyers are interesting on all of this sort of stuff. And I said, well, you know, tell me if someone has thought about this or hasn't thought about this, but why wouldn't one write a First and Second Amendment for the UK? Admittedly, you couldn't say that we could have guns because we gave those up in 10 minutes after Dunbayne. But what you could do as an Englishman's house is his castle. You're not allowed in. You're not. And then I spoke to a lawyer and he said, well, maybe you're looking at it the wrong way round. And instead of trying to instantiate free speech in law, what you should do is curb the powers of the police. Right back to the pre-Blair era, where the powers of arrest from the police were sincerely restricted. And his view was that a lot of the Southport arrests, for example, were illegal arrests. They were wrong arrests. They were not lawful arrests. And that people should have stood up and said, I'm going to sue you to the police.
Is this something bad law could do?
Yeah, well, it's something I'm looking into now, because I think that one of the other things that came up, which was suggested, was to say that you grant free legal aid to any person who claims that they've been wrongfully arrested by the state. So in the same way as in the family court, a woman who claims abuse, of which almost all do, who have a malevolent desire when it comes to divorce, you're granted legal aid. To grant any British citizen the right to full costed legal aid when they believe they've been wrongfully arrested.
Litigants, people would be just abusing it to get back at the state, and then we'd all be paying for it.
I don't know, because it's a very. I've been through court processes on both in the family court and in the libel court, and it's very, very draining. Like it's extremely tiring for someone to do, and it takes a long time. And I think that's what puts people off. You know, like as my friend Jeffrey said to me the other day. You know, people get to call you a racist and you have to pay them £90,000 for the privilege. You know, it's like we have to somehow together. Oh, God, I'm joining together. We have to somehow together come up with this idea that if you're saying the power is with the people, which I agree with you, it absolutely 100% is with the people. Yeah. But if the power is with the people, then we have to find protections within the law where the power can be transferred to the people, which means that if the full arm of the law comes down heavy on you for saying some whatever it is that you've said, your latest thought crime, you should be able to turn around and say, well, I think I've been wrongfully arrested and I have the power of the people, the taxpayer, us who pay taxes, to fully pursue you through the courts. Look, and I think
you're right. You're absolutely right. It should be able to do that, and that should work. But it won't work in practice. We already have this. The Harry Miller situation was this, wasn't it? It's like they've logged these people as non-crime hate incidents, and then people have said, well, that shouldn't be on my record, but it still is. It's still there. They still do it. They don't care.
Well, they've upgraded it. So what they did is they do what they always do, which is they double down on a bad decision. Yeah. So instead of saying it's a non-crime hate incident, they're now saying it's actually possibly a crime. So they use the non-crime as the way to get to the crime, which is very Soviet and very NKVD to do the barrier, show me the man, and I'll show you the crime. And that's, you know, we've said this before, and I think both of us feel this, and this is why it's really, why it's hard for us to try and navigate our way through stuff. It's like nobody realizes how bad it is and how bad it's becoming. So you think it's bad. Everyone's getting this strong instinct that it's bad. Alison's Pearson's been brilliant in highlighting it and using her platform to highlight it. But people just don't realize how much they've given up to these odious little bastards who, as you quite rightly pointed out, think that they somehow superior to us. And we look back at COVID and all of those sorts of things. It was the biggest transfer of wealth from working people and working class people and middle class people to the super rich. And we just keep giving up our rights. And that's where your and my frustration comes from, I think.
I saw that. Was it 3.7 trillion?
Yeah.
Was it pounds or dollars went from working people to the billionaires, to the richest people over COVID? That just shows that it was entirely monetarily based. Not to say that it was orchestrated. It could have been orchestrated, but the way that people handled the situation meant that the rich got richer and the poor got poorer. And that's disgusting to see when a so-called disaster is manipulated in that way.
And now they're doing it with Arla Foods, and they're making cows that don't fart, and the compound that they are using is highly toxic.
This is why I would not want to live forever. This plane just gets worse and worse. It's horrible, isn't it? It's so frustrating.
I think that that's the wonderful thing about not living forever, because it gives your life a meaning. And also, why would you want to live forever? When I was in showbiz, there was a lot of complaints that, you know, people were not retiring, especially in the camera department of filming. You'd have a director of photography who was usually always, you know, fairly senior, that both in age and experience, obviously. But you would have camera operators who were the one below the director of photography. And then you'd have the focus puller, which is actually the most important job on the film set, pulling the focus. It tells the story, who's the focus on. And these people getting older and older and older. So you get the clapper loader, the guy that stands in front of it goes, click, take one, douche. And they were getting older and older and older. And the trainees were getting older and older and older. And people were complaining that, you know, for the good health of others. So there is an actual natural system in life whereby you have fulfilled your most, you know, virulent years of getting your point across. And then you turn into my dad, who sits and thinks very carefully about these things and will offer up those points, but won't really
come. Wise sage.
Wise sage, he really is. Oh, man. Anyway, you're in America now, so you don't have to pay the license fee, but...
I didn't pay the license fee when I lived in the UK either. I don't think it should exist. Defunded. I happened to know a previous government was going to defund it, but they got ousted, unfortunately.
They promised to do it. They said they were going to do it. And then, like every government, they just don't do what they promised to do. Absolutely ridiculous. So it's £174.50. My number two, Jake Edward.
I thought he was your number one.
Well, he's, yeah,
who's
I mean,
number,
that's.
Who's your number one?
I think I'm my number one. I mean, I don't really understand this stuff. So within my own little unit, he's like, it's bloody good value.
What, the BBC?
He's like, look what you get for it. And I'm like,
you're forced to pay it. It doesn't matter what you get for it if you're forced to pay it.
Yeah.
That's a tax. Bullshit. That's theft.
It's absolute bullshit, isn't it? It's
pretty much the price of what Netflix or Sky or Amazon Prime. It's matching the prices of all of them, but you can choose to subscribe to them. You can't choose to subscribe to the BBC. If you watch any live content, but whether it's on the airwaves or online now, you have to pay for the BBC license fee. It's ridiculous.
Especially given as it's the main propaganda arm of the media.
Absolutely.
And we look back, and the government, and we look back, certainly over COVID and stuff like that, the BBC was pushing the narrative. YouTube would cut anybody off. We got a strike very early on for me reading out loud the JVCI, I think it was some stat from the government, and I read it out loud. and we got a strike early on, so we had to sort of rebuild the channel. It's impossible to trust the BBC, and one should never be forced to pay for anything under threat of a prison sentence. When are they going to defund it, and why has the defund movement not got bigger?
Well, they're not going to defund it because they've realised that it's one of the most trusted brands in the world, and so they can use that to manipulate the population. They can propagandise it, which they have done. They did it over COVID. They're doing it over lots of things. So it has become an arm of the government. So they're not going to defund it.
And do you think that if the BBC didn't exist or was a subscription service, do you think that some of the things that are very fashionable today, like the climate narrative, would be as fashionable? Because we've noticed how quickly the trans narrative has just completely imploded once we've got some common sense people in charge.
Well, we've seen this, right? So if you look at the United States, MSNBC is going bankrupt, right? They're being forced to sell because nobody's watching anymore. And one of the comments that these big outlets over here said is that clearly no one's watching us anymore because they haven't voted the way we've been telling them to vote in regards to Harris and Trump. Now, I'll reverse that and look at the United Kingdom. The vast majority of the people in the United Kingdom would have voted for Kamala Harris. The vast majority of conservatives in the United Kingdom would have voted for Kamala Harris. These are the statistics. This is not me making it up. And so people still are watching the mainstream media and getting their information from the BBC in the UK, unfortunately. They're still being propagandized to things like Orange Man Bad, kind of death cult woman good. It needs to die for that reason too. And it will free up the media. And of course, yeah, if they have to find a business model, a new form of revenue, then they'll have to adapt. And that means that they'll have to produce things that people want or don't want, and it will be free market. But also,
I agree with you to an extent, but I don't agree with you fully, because I do think the propaganda does affect stuff. I do. But all of the polling coming out of this organization that is funded by and supported from Kim Ledbetter's organization. I forget the name of it, but all of that polling, and it was like polling suggests that, you know, 4 out of 5 Brits support assisted dying.
Her own polling didn't show that. They were manipulating the data. Guido Fawkes put the actual data up there, and you could see that most Brits didn't support it, actually.
But we saw what effect. I don't think it's true that most Brits would have voted for Kamala Harris. I really don't. I think it's very true that most low information voting Brits would.
Most conservatives I know are still snobs. Most of them still dislike Trump. They can't believe that Americans voted for Trump. They can't believe it. It's the kind of people that can't believe that Americans allowed guns. They're so dangerous. Like, there's still that mentality, and that needs to be worked through.
It needs to be wiped out, actually. It's the First and Second Amendment are the greatest protections of human liberty ever conceived in the entire world.
But how do we used to believe in freedom, right? But it's a cultural belief, that it's a collective belief. It's not an individual belief. So how do we bring that back? I don't think as a people anymore we believe in freedom. We believe in safetyism. We believe in protectionism. We believe in the state controlling our lives. But how do we get back to, as a people, saying, no, we need to be free? Like you keep saying, an Englishman's home is his castle.
Well, it's the, you know, it's the much overquoted line from The Sun Also Rises, the Hemingway thing of saying that, you know, change is like bankruptcy. It happens very, very slowly and then very, very quickly.
Yeah.
And I do think that one must, especially at the darkest time, and you know, all the truisms of darkest before the dawn and all that sort of thing, I do think one must hold on, because I was saying again, I think, I can't remember who I was saying it to, but it, you know, the change could come via a cryptocurrency that everybody just suddenly goes, I want to be part of that. I don't want to be part of the fiat system. I have no interest in interest rates caused by my government. I have no interest in paying a gazillion pounds to house migrants. I want to do this. And I think people will, I would love it if they did do it. It would restore my faith in humanity, which is a bad phrase in itself. But it would restore my faith for people to go, you know what? I'm going to take a lot of my money out of your system. and it's going to live in a blockchain somewhere else. And I wonder whether this whole thing of CBDCs and all that sort of stuff that people went on about so much is actually might work in our favor in the long run, that people remove their money from the system. They remove the ability of the government to tax their wealth because they're putting their wealth into a cryptocurrency that doesn't have, isn't backed up by government lies and bullshit. And oh God, that would be such a gift. So maybe that's something we should really hope for.
No, that's good, because the only reason people don't use cryptocurrencies in day-to-day life is because it's inconvenient, but it only becomes convenient once it's a necessity. So like it's market forces, isn't it? If people want to spend Bitcoin in the local shops will find a way to receive and spend Bitcoin. So you're right. I think that could be a mechanism. But I was thinking about what you were saying the other day about opening the door with an axe, and people kept messaging me like, have a word, Lawrence has gone a bit far now, hasn't he? But actually, I'm thinking about it. I'm like, no, actually, you're right. I'm not going to be the reasonable one in this. Like, your own home is your castle, and you shouldn't have people coming around to speak to you about your tweets. Like, why should you not open the door with a shotgun in your hand? Like, that's your own castle, your own realm, and you're protecting yourself and your loved ones, and you believe in freedom. This is a good thing.
I think I did say, because, yeah, I mean, that I've had a few people who I really love, including my better half, said it was unwise. And wisdom, as far as I can gather, it means, its derivation is an understanding of God working with, you know, but it's God given. Yeah. And my response to people who were saying that way over the top was to say it will age well, that tweet. Mm. Because if you're saying that you can come around my house and my property can become your property, and you can express yourself on my property because I happen to want to defend myself from you, then fuck you. That's war. We're in an absolute war at that situation. So I would, and I absolutely stand by it. I'm not encouraging people to go out on the streets and fight the police. No. I'm turning around and saying, do not trust the police. Do not trust the police.
Protect your home and protect your own. And I think that's a good message, actually.
Yeah, it is a good message.
If people come around to threaten you on your own property, you should have defensive mechanisms. Absolutely.
I do. And I absolutely
don't
do.
Don't say what they are.
No, I won't. But last night, at about 10:45, because it was really bothering me, I went and fitted a lock out on one of the gates over there. Because I just thought, I want the extra 30 seconds of you having to smash that gate down.
Yeah.
Because I genuinely do, and I know it's a sort of, you know, it's a vaguely paranoid thing, but it's not like I haven't had the persecution of the police. I do know what it's like to be attacked by the police. And as we've discussed before, it's this idea of like, who are you more frightened of, a police or an Islamist coming to chop your head off because you don't agree with them? Yeah. It's like the fact that we live in a society that tolerates that behavior drives me insanely mad, which is why I think all the reform crybabyism is like, well, you know, they go on about we're really anti-woke. It's like, no, you're not. You're pro-woke. You're a pro-woke party because you're pro-diversity, equity, and inclusion. You go, the way we'll deal with the diversity, equity, and inclusion problem is to get a Mohammedan to be our chairman. You know, not. They don't understand for a minute what that means.
It's inclusive.
But it's inclusive, exactly. So I would encourage the Conservatives, and certainly Kemi Badenoch, to attack Farage and reform where they are vulnerable, which is on the culture. They don't understand the culture.
But to be fair, they've got the same problem. They've now got a Nigerian leader. As much as I like Kemi, you've got a Nigerian leading the Conservative Party. So how tough on immigration can they be? The daughter of immigrants, someone who's raised there in her childhood.
I don't know. I'm a civic. I went to watch Ayan Hirsi Ali talk, and she spoke very eloquently about civic. Yeah, she's great. The civic nationalist versus the ethno nationalist thing, and I've got no problem at all with Kemi being Nigerian. The problem I do have, actually, if I do have a problem with her, is the fact that she's got a Nigerian passport. I don't think you should be able to hold any other passport than a British one if you're going to serve as a prime minister.
100%. You can't have dual loyalties.
You just can't, because also, where's Sunak going to run off to? The minute, why is Sunak still in Parliament? Actually, out of interest, I thought
he's doing his little bit. I did think he'd be in California by now. I'll give you that.
Mm. Well, the media told us he would. Well, I think we've done much better this time round, Calv. Yeah, we've done much better. I think I almost might posit on the virtual sense, never as much fun. Oh, yeah, let's go on to that. In the virtual sense, I think this is the best. This is the best chat we've had. It's very difficult to do in the virtual sense, which brings me on to. We would like to posit to you together the idea that I've obviously got to go and see Calvin because he's my best mate, and he's not at all made me feel bad about the fact that I haven't visited already. I promise you, I don't feel guilty. I don't feel shamed. I feel completely loved and honored by him. But we were thinking if we did. When I do go over to spend some time at Calv, why wouldn't we do, and it was suggested by one of our lovely followers, why wouldn't we do a Fox and Father tour? So in the comments, probably for our American friends, but also for our English friends, because he has to come back to England too, tell us whether you'd be interested in that. And we would love to come and see you and speak live and, mainly just answer your questions, actually. I think it would be more fun, wouldn't it? Have a small chat and answer some questions. So let us know if you would be interested in doing that. You're up that, Calv.
Fox and Father live on tour. I love it. Audience engagement is my favorite part of public speaking. So I'd love to do that.
Good. Well, I think it's, what time is it? Oh, it's 4:15.
Lunchtime.
It's
tea time for you. It's lunchtime for me.
It's tea time for me. I've got to go and I've got a problem with a Maggie has come back on heat. Oh. And there's three of them. So all three of the male dogs don't know that they are incapable of having children. So Maggie needs a lot of love at this time.
So Sparky, Blaze and Rocky. Okay.
I'm going to leave you with that image.
Oh, I can remember. I can remember last time when there were just two dogs with another one in the mix. Goodness me! There were some rapey situations going on in your household.
Well, this morning I can't describe the carnage I came down to.
Whoa.
I'm just grateful it's not going to involve another bunch of puppies. Because also when we went on the walk. Yeah. Today we went on the walk. The walk is my favorite time of the day because it's the time to talk and you're really in the middle of nature. Mm. And you're on a walk. And I met these people who had two giant dogs with huge muzzles on them who were like straining at the leash. And our dogs just run up and they're quite friendly and they're like, "Get your dogs away, get your dogs away." Mm. And I'm like, I tend to ignore those people. And yeah. Lizzie was like, "Well, maybe if your dog needs a muzzle and a lead, you should take it somewhere else to walk." Yeah. And the woman turned around and she went, "If you carry on speaking to me like that, I'll take the muzzle off and I'll let the dog off the lead."
Oh, yeah. And you pulled your shotgun out and you were like, "Shut up."
but we both went straight to the Second Amendment, which was we both would have just gone,
"Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
That's the way you want to roll?" Anyway, I love you, Bo.
Love you too, brother. And I miss those walks. There's nothing better than a walk in God's creation with your dog. I mean, you've got enough dogs now, but with your dogs following you around, it's wonderful.
It is wonderful. I will. I will see. Are you taking a week off to be in Miami, or are you gonna?
We can do one from Florida, but it will be late for you. So we'll have to try and work it out. See what works.
Well, actually, I'm going to be away myself. So, I can't tell you that. Oh, but okay. I've realised that.
Jeffrey.
No. Oh, oh. Jeff. No, not this. Not yet. Jeffrey, my friend Jeffrey, will be visited in the early part of the new year. But no, I realised that Lizzie and I have never ever been away together.
Yeah.
Without going to see someone or without, which is great. It's great. We've got lovely friends. Yeah. But we've never actually just gone somewhere where we don't have to do anything. So we're quite excited to do that, which we will be doing. And my house is booby-trapped, so good luck. Now, remember, what's really important in the world is gold, Calv.
It is. It's very important.
We've talked about cryptocurrency. Mm-hmm. And now we would like to give you, before we go, some gold. Oh, hang on. Gold. Wait, I'm going to do this better. Gold. Now, as we come to the end of the show, I did promise you that we had a new sponsor.
Yes.
Sponsoring the Fox and Father show, because apparently this company, Gold Bullion Partners, a few of our listeners
have decided that while being faced with the tyranny of potential digital IDs and CBDCs and what where they can keep their money safely without it being removed from the government, they have come up with the idea of gold. Well, this is actually silver.
Well, I've got some gold.
I've got some gold too! but my gold's a little one.
Well, so, the problem is your money isn't yours if it's in the bank, and you can't rely on it, you can't trust the banks. So we've got to invest in assets.
No capital gains tax.
That's interesting.
No capital gains tax.
I've got a lot of friends who are buying gold and silver, actually.
Yeah, non-traceable. I'm buying silver because gold's a bit up there for me at the moment. I could probably get one of these. But this is legal tender.
Is it?
Yeah.
Okay.
You could.
I wouldn't want to spend it, though.
No, I'm just saying.
A lot of places aren't accepting legal tender anymore, and that's part of the problem, that the more we go to a cashless society, the more the government can control everything that we do. They can see every penny we spend. They can control where we spend it. That's not a good thing.
But gold and silver are holding their values beautifully in absolutely. The world. And in times of trouble, people tend to lean and go towards gold and silver. So, you know, Gold Bullion Partners, guys. Their link will be in the show notes. And if you so feel that you want to...
Absolutely. Do your own research. Look into it.
Right. I love you.
God bless. And thank you all for watching. See you next time.
Cheers, guys. Bye.